Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Good morning, everybody.
I am entirely a whole vibe today.
Happy Thursday.
Big ol' happy Thursday. Sabres start. Like, I'm starting on the lowest parts of this, okay? But the Sabres start, so it means I get to watch hockey or watch more hockey from around here.
Right.
Whether that's successful or not, we'll get into that. But because the Sabres play tonight, I get to go on a two-day streak of eating that chicken parm sub.
It's going to be an event. It's going to be an event for you.
I will text you a picture of that.
It's going to be an event.
Yes, it will.
I've also got playoff baseball continuing to go on.
Jays, which is the next part of it, because the Jays move on to the next round.
The bullpen game got it done.
The bullpen game. And you know what? It's good because they kind of chunked it in game three. Mm-hmm. They start the pitcher that gives up the bomb to Judge to tie the game in game three. They start him. He does fine through two innings. But they had questions heading into that game. They got it done. So, great day. Okay, Bills, what you got? Oh, they at least get back to practice.
They are back to practice today. We'll talk with Sal in just about a half hour at 10:30.
But today,
we'll get some of the latest on the injuries. Today, though, is going to be very much Sabres-centric home opener for the season against the New York Rangers, a team that they played pretty well against, at least their goaltender, Igor Shesterkin, did very well against him last year. Many of the new additions will be playing. One of the main ones, though, will not be.
The biggest piece will not.
Mm-hmm. But we'll get more into that as we go along here today from 10 to 12. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. The good news, though, in terms of the injuries for the Sabres, Owen Power went from a non-contact jersey earlier in the week, a contact jersey, and now he is expected to play, he along with Matias Samuelsson, so that is at least good on the blue line for them to have most of their decor ready to go. Alex Lyon is expected to get the start tonight. I'd be stunned if it was literally anybody else. I think we all would be.
Freshly claimed Colton Ellis would be its selection.
He would be the guy. That would be interesting.
That would be, you know what that would be? Actually, even Alex Lyon's probably going to be an interesting trivia answer one of these days. But
yep.
It was one of those things where it was legitimately looking like they might not have the entire second pair on defense to start the year. And it's like, oh, okay. I don't care what the analytics are telling us about the Sabres and the prediction charts. That's not a great way to start the year. But Power should be back. Injured reserve in hockey is different than it is in football. You can go and assign it retroactively to the day of injury.
Mm-hmm.
Teams probably cheese it every now and then.
Game the system if you can.
Game the system if you can.
I have no issue with that.
And Power in a contact jersey in the day before the game tells me he's ready to go, and it was kind of where they were going to be at all along in order to make a roster spot ready for him. They've waived Alex Georgiev, who was going to terrify me if he had to put on a Sabres uniform in the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
So, vibes are up? Question mark?
I'm that's kind of where I want to start. And so you're somebody, you watched a lot of preseason hockey this year for the
Sabres. As a matter of fact, I had to do a couple of these games for the station.
You did. I did not. And I spoke on this a little bit last night on the nightcap. But for me, a big part of this, and maybe this is not the right way to do it, but it's how it was for me. I've bought in with this team a few times over the last few years.
My fault.
And I've gotten burned by it. And so for this year, and mainly after the draft and kind of the lack of finding that second, the top six forward or what have you, I'm going to move on. I'll get there when I get there. About a week or so before the season actually started, I started to get there, and I'm here now. My thing is, though, and I wonder how many other fans are like this, of just how important just this month is for them to actually care about where the team is at. That's maybe not fair to the Sabres, who are dealing with injuries, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, Michael Kesselring, we've already mentioned, and what have you. But maybe not even just this first month, the first week of the season, of having the Rangers and then Boston.
Right. A Boston team that now is bad.
But if you start 0-2, 0-1-1, how quickly do people just go, I can't do this again?
I already can't do this again. And the worst part, I think, is the timing of it, if that happens. Because let's be real about this right now. The vibes around the Bills, a 4-1 team, are not great. They've played poorly through three games. They finally lose one. They lose to a Patriots team that you should have beaten. And now people are, I would say, properly teeing off on the issues that have been there for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also plenty of overreaction going on and misery. Again, it's a fine line. And plenty of people are not recognizing said fine line. But, yeah, if the Sabres start off with two losses again, that is kind of a throwing your arms up in the air and going, what are you good for? Which is kind of why they need to get off to a hot start.
We've talked about it a little bit, that fast start. And it may not mean anything. I mean, they could get off to a slow start and actually, fun enough, just be just fine. They could get off to a hot start. We've seen that before, and it ultimately mean nothing. But I think for just – look, tonight is going to be a sellout. That's what I was hearing yesterday, and I think it's continuing on it today. Like, it's going to be a sold-out crowd. Great. I've mentioned that the first few games are probably the best to go to because there's nothing dragging you there because they're great, and there's nothing pulling you away because they're bad. It's just the start of a new season and the excitement there. It's very fresh. It's very honest.
And that's the thing about the start of a season is that hope is always abound for every franchise, even the one that is here. Unless you're San Jose.
Right.
They are still going through the years-long rebuild. Their roster. I kid. But my point there is that this team has an opportunity to make a statement early on right away. And there are going to be enough fans in this fan base that say, I've seen this trick before. You're going to pull the wool over my eyes, and the question is when. And this team does get off to hot starts. As a matter of fact, up until December last year, they were having one. Like, granted, they go 0-3-1 to start the year, but when December starts, they're threatening for second in the Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
In that division, with Florida and Toronto and Tampa, they're the ones threatening for second place at that point. And then they don't win until Christmas or the day before Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm.
And the season is lost then and there. My thing is, hope is always going to be there. Fan bases are hilariously forgiving. They can also be hilariously fickle. Tonight is a chance to at least set a tone. It's one game out of 82. I am very interested, when I'm in that crowd tonight, to find out what the attitude becomes as everyone's walking out.
Mm-hmm.
Do fans have themselves a good old time today? Or am I eating a chicken parm sub in sadness? We're going to find out. And again, it's one game. But for a franchise, and in particular a locker room at this point, that needs it, it's pretty important. Because there's a lot of pieces on this core that was recognized by Kevin Adams. They want to get this done. They want to be the ones to break the drought. They want to effectively be immortalized within Buffalo sports.
Right.
And also, players like to win. You can't keep skating for a team that is so pitted in misery and do it forever. You can only take so much.
Mm-hmm.
Even the most honorable will have that problem. It's one game, but go set the tone. You are facing a team that has Matt Rempe on their power play unit. I know that drove Owen crazy as I'm looking at him over there in the glass. Like, that drove him crazy seeing that. You better beat a team that's starting Matt Rempe on a power play unit. And it also gives us another thing, Zach, if they start out nice and hot. An escape. It gives people a chance to turn away from the Bills, who've kind of irritated them over 3 weeks. And here's a distraction. It gives us, talking on the Extra Point Show here, a chance to talk about something else.
Yeah, I don't have to talk about wide receivers.
Yes.
So cool.
I would love a break from talking about
that. For just a little bit.
I'm talking about first world problems here. But yes, I would love to stop talking about wide receivers for a second. I would love to stop talking about separation score. That's the new phrase that's just going to make me vomit. But the Sabres offer an opportunity for you to have a distraction. Mm-hmm. Hey, look at me over here. Like, I got A's on my first two classes in midterms. That's the Sabres starting 2-0. You peek your eye over there and go, huh, okay. Maybe you will be fun this year. And we'll see what happens.
It's a little thing, but yeah.
Enough of the fan base is going to say, I've seen this before, don't you dare. But there's also enough of the fan base that's going to go, okay, show us something.
Mm-hmm.
That's the opportunity they have in front of them tonight.
What's frustrating too, and we talked a lot about it when it was happening, I think we've maybe not ignored it, but just when it became another lost season, it just kind of all clumped together. This is a team that was able to also go on win streaks. What was that? I mean, they finally won 3 games in a row for the first time in like 2 years last year and what have you. It really was just don't go on a 13-game losing streak.
Right.
And you'll probably be just fine. That is maybe, in trying to be hopeful, but give us a second. Just don't do that. When they start going on that streak, you mentioned it. Like, they start terribly in Europe. They look awful. And the power play continues to be a disaster for a little bit there, what have you. But when the losing streak starts, they're 11-9-1. They've rebounded from a bad start in Europe. Their special teams are not very good, and yet 5-on-5, they're just fine if not very good.
As a matter of fact, in November, there's an injury to Thompson.
Yeah.
That they survive.
Mm-hmm. Which is something in years prior, not a thing. Not a thing. They could not survive a Dahlin injury the year prior.
So now you're without your best forward, and you survive. And it's out west.
Mm-hmm.
Sabres after dark early in the season, and they thrive on that trip, actually. And climb toward third in the Atlantic. Threatening for second.
And this is a team that started the year, we talk about Europe, but they started the year 1-4-1. They were not good.
They were not good to start it.
And they were able to climb back in. It's that losing streak right there. And I guess that's at least something that does give me hope. Even though they've done it 2 years in a row where their season has ended because of an unbelievably long losing streak. But it does give me some hope in the sense of, but you've proven you're talented enough to go on some win streaks, to make up some ground you maybe have lost. You just can't go into such a rut that statistically it's an anomaly.
WGR Sports Radio 5.
That's the only thing you can't do is get into such a rut that you can't get out. They've got talent. I heard Joe and Jeremy talking about it. They don't necessarily have the two star players that are driving everything.
Right.
But they've got the depth. Now, the big piece and the guy that I'm excited to watch tonight is Josh Norris. He took Zach Benson's number 9. That's fine. We'll deal with it later. Zach Benson's number 6. My issue there is nothing really Norris does in particular. It's his health. The most games
right.
he's ever played in an NHL season is 66. That also happens to be by far his best season. 35 goals, 55 points. But outside of that, he's never played more than 60 games except for that one season.
Norris, by the way, in the preseason was fantastic on a line with Thompson. They seem to have chemistry right away. It's going to be very fascinating. Benson playing there. Krebs played there in the preseason as well. It didn't seem to matter. If you have a skilled player that at least knows how to get the puck to them, everyone's going to thrive. It is health. But Norris has an opportunity here. This is the first real look Sabres fans will get at him. He only plays a couple of games, and that's it for last year. And they shut him down with the oblique injury.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember Norris right away trying to find some sort of, I guess I'd call it goodwill within the locker room as a new addition. Because one of the games that he plays, of the two that he plays, is Detroit on the road. That game turns into like Scrum Central. There's a relatively dirty hit in that game by Detroit. The Sabres, they may be getting their teeth kicked in on the scoreboard, but they stood up and said, no, we're not taking this.
Mm-hmm.
And almost everybody was trying to find a partner that night.
Yeah.
But that's the only real look that you got at Norris. He had a point in that game, by the way. But now there's an opportunity here. Real opportunity to look at a Sabres player in number 9 like nobody has ever been able to do so before. I see you smirking. I know you see what I did
Eichel
there.
Eichel did score last night.
Yeah,
signed,
I know.
Signed his extension, too.
Yeah, that's cool.
Just pointing it out, it did happen.
I'm going to point out that people are going to look at number 9 here and think, wow, that guy's really good.
Well, we were doing that with Zach Benson.
Yeah.
And we moved on.
Yeah.
I'm excited for Norris. There seems to be so much potential there that is locked away behind his injuries.
Right.
And I said something maybe a few weeks ago about him. Just if he can get to 70 games, I'd be thrilled. I would be through the roof. I didn't realize he had hit 60 games one time in his career. I mean, now I'd be through the roof if he was able to hit 70. I know Brayton Wilson put up his bold predictions, and he had, you know, a bold prediction being that Norris plays the entire year. If he's able to do that, that top line, the top end talent they do have, could be incredibly dangerous against an Atlantic division that seems to be on the downswing a little bit here. You mentioned Boston is terrible.
Boston's the only team that you – I'm going to argue with that slightly because Boston's the only team in the Atlantic that you can actually count on being terrible.
No, absolutely. But you have Florida dealing with their injuries. You have Toronto. We're going to see what they look like without Marner. They did get a win last night, 5-2 against Montreal. There is some changes going on. And then, of course, you have the perennial three teams that might make a jump up, Ottawa, Detroit, Buffalo. You really kind of don't know what you're getting with any of them, ever.
You mentioned Montreal, though. That's another team that they were a young mm-hmm. team that punched above their weight class last year. Can you turn around and do it again? Or at least take the next step?
Mm-hmm. We'll see. I'm excited. In part, I think I'm – you know what? Honestly, though, and I do mean this, I think I'm excited because I haven't, for 2-3 months leading up to this, zeroed in on every single decision they've done. The most I've done is in the last 2 weeks of just, okay, let's get back into hockey. Let's, you know, hear what this team is doing and that team is doing and listen to some podcasts. And it's allowed me to just take a breath with them a little bit. And that's for me personally. I'm not saying that's got to be for everybody, but for me personally. And this may also help them this year, the Olympic break. They're going to have a lot of games clumped together.
Yep.
We mentioned it. It could be one of those things. If they get on a run, there's almost nothing stopping it. You just keep going and going and going and going. There's no real practice time either. It's literally just you're playing games. In the same vein, though, it could be a real negative. If they're getting into a rut, again, there may not be anything to get them out of it. The hope there is, and say what you will about Kevyn Adams, he did mention it multiple times. He knows he botched the 13-game losing streak and not making a move. So you hope if they're ever even remotely near that same situation again, he learned from the past mistakes and is willing to make a move, willing to do something. Because I get it. You're on a lot of teams' no-trade lists and what have you. But at least to try to do something.
I'm going to be a little bit more apprehensive on the general manager in terms of moves that he can and would prefer to make. But that is not tonight.
No.
Tonight is about the home opener. It is about the first game of the season. It is about trying to start 1-0. It is about trying to invigorate a fan base that is desperately asking you to do it for them. How often does this station even talk about this team now? That's the problem. They've become almost the forgotten child. It's an opportunity to at least start the year and go, let's see what you got.
Okay, yeah.
That is the opportunity here.
803-0550, the number to call. Your thoughts going into tonight as the Buffalo Sabres will open up the season at home against the New York Rangers. 6 p.m. pregame, 7 p.m. puck drop. We'll go to the phones here as Frank is first up today. Frank, how we doing?
Good, thanks. I wanted to talk about two things when it comes to the Sabres. First of all, I just wanted to point out earlier you had said that Owen Power was in a contact jersey, which is kind of like jumbo shrimp, I think. It's kind of a whether he's in a contact jersey or not, I don't think that much matters when it comes to him as far as contact goes. And then second of all, the thing I'm worried about the Sabres and I'm looking for and I'm hoping that they really improve on, and you can even point to the last preseason game, and I know preseason isn't necessarily a barometer of how the team is going to be, but it points to what has really hurt this team, especially over the last two or three years, is that they get a lead in the third period, and eventually you can almost see the writing on the wall. They gave it up. They had a two-goal lead in that Pittsburgh game, and I said to myself, uh-oh, they have a lead going into the third period. So I guess that's all I wanted to say about that. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Frank. Frank, thanks for the call. Owen Power, he's going to have to deal with that forever, isn't he? First of all, whether it's right or wrong, he is going to have to do something.
Yeah,
to
first
prove
of all,
it
a non-contact
incorrect.
Jersey also means don't hit him in practice. But you know, any way you can make that joke, you go ahead and do it.
That was something for them though last year, right? It was the losing the leads. I'm thinking about the. I know Paul's brought this up. The Colorado Avalanche game in the middle of that losing streak, it's their fourth straight loss. That's one of them, isn't it? Where they
do it twice, actually, with Colorado.
They do it twice in that game.
In that season with Colorado. They do it twice to the same franchise, actually. As a matter of fact, Pittsburgh, the team that beat them in said last preseason game, does this to them as well early in the year. Where Buffalo, instead of walking away with a victory, they end up going home with an overtime loss. I'm not going to use Alex Georgiev in net as a barometer for how it's going to go again this year. I'll tell you that right now. And I'll say that with confidence and I'll say it with my chest. I'm not going to go ahead and use the line that I usually do with the Bills in the playoffs, which is last year's or previous performances do not guarantee future success or failures, because I am talking about a team with such a long playoff drought. It would actually be naive of me to use that same sort of argument. What I am going to say, though, is that it is indeed a new season. And unfortunately, through either hell or high water, we're going to find out together what they are again.
I just hope they're not out of it by Christmas. 803-0550, the number to call. Feelings on the Sabres as they begin their season tonight. We'll also get a word in on the Bills when we come back as they get back to practice today with them playing.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
On Monday, we'll get a word in on the injuries as well. A number of the big ones. Matt Milano going to be week to week, but maybe Ed Oliver could be a full participant today. Zach Capaccio will join the show next for more of a word on the Bills. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Welcome back, everyone. Before we do get to San Capaccio, are you ready to take your game day to the next level? Enter online now at WGR550.com for your chance to win 300 tailgate trace certificate from Alibaba Kebab to feed 12 football fans each Friday. A winner will be announced during Football Friday with Shope and the Bulldog. Fire up your taste buds at any of their three locations. Now, we head to the Western Hotline as Sal Capaccio joins the show. Sal, Bills get back to work today, but first off, sorry about the Yankees, bud. Sorry.
Hey, it's good talking to you guys. I'll talk to you later.
Hey, I didn't even do it. Zach did it. So
I was actually just leaving the house and thinking about am I going to get some alert today that, you know, Aaron Boone's been fired? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think so, right? I mean, like, this has been many years, and I'm not saying, oh, my God, go fire him. I'm not generally like that. I get it. Like, if they do, I'm totally fine with it, but I was just wondering that today. It was a tough one. Listen, I'm disappointed. I'm upset. But, man, like, when you lose to a better team, and they were just a machine. The Blue Jays were just a machine hitting the ball. It's unbelievable. And they got a great outing last night from their bullpen. But overall, they are just incredible on offense, and they have kind of a little bit of a mix of everything that you need, right, with contact, especially contact. But they have some power. And, you know, they can run the bases. So they're just, they deserve to win. They were the better team, no doubt about it.
Sal, I will tell you, and this is as a neutral fan, I'm just watching the games. When Dominguez hit the double, though, in the bottom of the ninth, right away I was like, oh, here we go. Like, and again, neutral wasn't like I was having bad feelings for the Blue Jays. It was more like, oh, here we go. Because it's a guy that it's first at bat of the postseason. This is what he does. And, you know, they're panning over to Judge, like, only a few more batters away. I was like, stop it. Don't do this to me. I was having fun.
I was actually listening or thinking back on words that you said to us yesterday, Sal, of no team is dead between the two of them with how their bats work, that until the game is over, it's not over. And that started off in the ninth, and I'm like, oh, no. Sal's words are resonating with me right now. I'm afraid.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, I was glad that Judge didn't make the last out, right? I mean, he's in – that it didn't come down to every highlight reel in America shows the last out all the time, right? And I'm just glad it wasn't him making the last out because it's Aaron Judge. And he had a phenomenal series, obviously. And here we go, another year of no, you know, World Series for Aaron Judge, and it sucks. But he was incredible. You know, he hit that, obviously, that iconic home run. But it kind of becomes a footnote, to be quite honest with you now, which really sucks, you know, for that reason. So, hey, you know, it's funny. You roll into you get the final Yankees game last night and then the first Sabres game today. And it just keeps moving, right?
I did think about, like, bringing you in and going, like, one season ends and another begins. But I was like, that might be a little mean. But, yeah,
it's right. It's right. But it's okay. I mean, I'll be at the game tonight. You know, we're going. And I'm excited for it. I'm excited to see the Sabres tonight. I'm excited about, you know, a new hockey season. Everybody's 0-0. You just never know. And, you know, we'll see where it goes. So it stinks. It's okay. I do wonder, though, who I'll be rooting for as the playoffs go on. I have not made, like, a definitive choice. I do not, like, despise the Blue Jays or anything like that. It's a nice rivalry with the Yankees. It's like, you know, you hate them in the moment, you know, when you're playing them. But it's very, very hard for me not to like Vlad. I love Vlad. I've loved Vlad since he came into the league. Since he was the Bisons. It's really great. And I know that Bichette has a chance to come back later, you know. But I don't know, because I like the way the Brewers play, and I know it's the other league. And, yeah, the Mariners are fun to watch. I'll root for the Blue Jays over the Tigers. If it's Blue Jays Mariners, yeah, I'll probably still remember the Blue Jays, I guess, and then we'll see what happens in the World Series.
Just anybody but the Dodgers. That's the key for me. Anybody but the Dodgers.
Yeah. I would agree with this.
Sal Capaccio here on the Western Hotline. Sal, for the Bills, it's been a little bit of a weird week with it being Monday Night Football. So the first practice and the first injury report is actually going to be today. We talked a little bit yesterday. The Ed Oliver Instagram post probably doesn't mean too much, but it could mean he might be in line for either being a full participant or just being on his way to, you know, playing on Monday. It could be a huge boon for the Bills. What else, though, are we looking for today?
Yeah, and I like seeing that from Ed. Like, I think Ed came into this year. We were told by Brandon Bean during the preseason, during a radio production meeting, how, like, much he really loved what he saw from Ed through training camp. Like, he said he had one of the best training camps he's had. And then he carried it over into week one, right, against the Ravens. He was great in that game. But he was great. And he was very disappointed last week when we talked to him, like, just about the injury and not being able to kind of build on week one and just kind of having that setback. So I just think mentality-wise, I'm glad that Ed is ready to rock and roll and wants to get back after it. And he said he wants to be dominant again like he was week one when he gets back out there. I do think it means that he's probably trending in a very good direction to playing. It seemed like he was close last week. We'll hear from Sean McDermott a little bit later today. We'll find out more about Matt Milano. Feels like he's not going to play this week. He was termed week to week. You have one game. It's a non-conference game. Then you have a bye week. So you're probably looking at that. Plus, they did, you know, re-sign Vaylin Spector to the practice squad yesterday. That's probably an indication, you know, linebacker, they're a little thin. I think Dorian Williams is the guy there, though, you're looking more at. You know, what's the situation with Dorian Williams? Is he going to be available this week or not? That's probably the big one we're looking at right now.
Yeah, Sal, when it comes to how the linebacker core is looking and the health of it right now, I am excited, though, to see a little bit more of Shaq Thompson. He's become a sneaky addition with this Bills team through the first five games.
Yeah, me too. I think he's really been a pleasant addition, a pleasant surprise in a lot of ways. Maybe some people thought, hey, he's going to come in and have this role. When he was signed, I thought, depth guy for preseason and training camp, see what he's got, good veteran to have in the room, probably not going to make the team. And then as training camp and preseason went on, guys, I really was like, wow, wait a minute. Like, they're going to have a role for him, I think. And, you know, I had him on the 53, on my projected 53, just from what I saw during camp and preseason, that he was going to make the team, and he did. And he does have a very clear role in this team, and now that role is becoming even more prominent and stepping up, especially with these injuries at linebacker. He's done a very good job. He's very versatile. He can play all three linebacker positions. He's not the same Shaq Thompson he was when he came in the league. He can play like a safety linebacker hybrid. They will put him there sometimes, but he's not the same kind of player. But, man, he still brings a lot to the party when he gets there. And every game it seems like he's making some sort of hit that gets everyone energized. And I think it's very, very beneficial to have him on the roster right now.
Sal, looking around at the rest of the linebackers too, I know we focused a lot on the secondary and even Matt Milano as well in the linebacker room, but another player that maybe has been kind of up and down this year, maybe not totally playing up to the contract extension he got, was Terrell Bernard. As much as, yeah, like Shaq Thompson, you mentioned it, like they're really, it feels like it's been a hit every game where he's gotten going. It's not like Terrell Bernard's been completely silent. He's still got that eye for the ball. He still seems to be around every takeaway the Bills have. But what have you seen overall from his season through five games?
Yep. Hey, sorry, guys. I lost you for a moment there. Just asked me to my quarter to talk to him.
Sal, do we still got you?
Yep, you got me. Sorry about that. I went to a bad spot there for a second. Could you just repeat what you said there? And I
yeah.
Saw the beginning of it.
Just Terrell Bernard. What have you seen overall through his first five games?
Yeah, you know, I think that Terrell has had some ups and downs. He seems to make critical plays. Chris Brown called him Mr. Fourth Quarter when he came up with that kind of clutch player. But I think you want a little more consistency from the through four quarters. And I think when your run defense is struggling, a lot of times you look right at the middle linebacker, and this is not a Ray Lewis throwback type of linebacker. I mean, I love Terrell Bernard and his game, right? No doubt about it. But Terrell Bernard's the kind of linebacker that, you know, he can't just go plug A-gaps by himself at his size. He's going to need some help up front. I think maybe, you know, getting when this team gets Ed Oliver back, and hopefully that's this week, I think everybody's going to be better. And that includes Terrell Bernard behind him. That includes Joey Bosa. That includes Greg Rousseau, because he's going to help the interior of the defense have to be focused on a little bit up front. And I think that will allow Terrell Bernard to do a little bit more. So I think he's got to be a little more consistent from what we've seen through four quarters. But he's still making a few, you know, big plays, and that's what you need from Terrell Bernard, and that's who he's always been.
It is frustrating. I mean, Sal, you mentioned it there too. Like, Ed Oliver coming back is probably going to help out Terrell Bernard, and it's been one of the more disheartening, frustrating, however you want to put it, things about the start of the season. Yes, they're 4-1, but we really just have not been able to see what this defense looks like at its full complement. Of course, with the guys with the suspensions, but even your first round pick is ultimately injured, and we have no idea how that's going to go the rest of the year after his LCL sprain, Max Harrison. It's just we're seeing some of these trades starting to come in, Sal. We saw a corner-for-corner trade last night as well. I just wonder, you know, where the Bills are going to find a spot, if they even want to make a move with not having any time to see how this defense looks all put together.
Well, I know that it's going to sound like, well, that's not really the same thing, but let's remember they're getting two guys back from suspension. And it is right around, right before the trade deadline. So, yes, I know the team can say, well, or fans can say, you know, this is like a trade deadline acquisition. And it's not, but it kind of is, right? Because they are being added into a team. And the difference is they already know the system. They've been here. They've been working with the team. Talking about, obviously, Michael Hoyt and Larry Ogunjobi. I do think those guys will help a lot. I think especially Michael Hoyt. I don't know what Larry Ogunjobi, how much he can help necessarily, because they do rotate and have numbers there and decisions to make. I think Michael Hoyt is going to be a big part of this team going forward. I think they have a big plan for him. They had a plan for him when they signed him. He's going to be able to move around the defense, do a lot of different things. So that's number one. Number two is you do have a bye week coming up after this week. If there are any moves planned by Brandon Bean before the November 4th trade deadline, this might be the week you want to do it. Maybe you get a guy in that he can, you know, really kind of get into the building a little bit early. You're not sacrificing missing him for a game while he's got to be on the active roster. So we'll see. I do think, the team will look to see if they can help themselves at secondary if they feel they're not going to get any more contribution from Max Harrison or Dorian Strong. But we don't know that, right? That's a big question mark right now. Those are things they're going to have to look at numbers-wise.
Sal, obviously the offense had a little bit of struggles in the New England game, particularly on the ground. But the thing that I'm getting more and more fascinated by through the first five games of the year, though, it's Dalton Kincaid. The guy is playing fantastic, and he's not even getting truly half of the snap share as of late. What has it been like, though, to watch Kincaid grow right now? And could we maybe be seeing more of him actually getting a higher snap percentage going forward?
Well, I don't know about the snap percentage. Mm-hmm. I think that they have a philosophy of how they want to use their tight ends, and it's working out for them. They run 13 personnel, and they run it a lot, and they do it well. And the running game has been very good. Now, it wasn't as good last week, but they're actually better against the Patriots than most teams were against the Patriots. But yeah, I think you got to be careful with that, Derek. Like, it's great to see the ascension of Dalton Kincaid, but maybe part of the ascension is that he's not having all these snaps. And he has to do all these other things, right? Like, part of it is you're keeping him fresh, and when you need him to do different things, he can be on the field. So I wouldn't rush to just say put Dalton Kincaid on, because the more he's on, the less maybe Jackson Hawes is off the field, right? And you could say Dawson Knox too, and that's fine. But I think the Bills have a good philosophy of how they're running it. I don't know if anybody's really eager to just start upping everyone's snap counts, because he's been really efficient. I think that part of the efficiency is the amount that he's on the field.
Zach Baccio here on the Western Hotline. Sal, last thing for me has nothing to do with the NFL. I don't know, though. Did you see the Bill Belichick reports from yesterday from Ali Conley? His buyout of $1 million. They may be heading in that direction.
I did. I mean, you're talking to a guy who's not that surprised.
I know.
I was the first on this train years ago. And sorry, but I've been wrong a lot in my life. It's one thing I've been pretty damn right about, and that's that Bill Belichick is not the greatest coach ever, and he had Tom Brady with him. And yes, he's the most accomplished coach ever, and there is a difference between that. And when he got the job at North Carolina, my first thought was, this is not going to go well. Like, he is not suited for the college game, and he's going to want all this control and do all this stuff and think he can run it like a pro program, and he can't do that. And now look where they are. It's an embarrassment right now what's going on at UNC, that they have to put out a joint statement between the AD and Bill Belichick that they're on the same page, and they're clearly not. I mean, allegedly, he's getting, like, investigated by the school itself for recruiting violations, mm-hmm. and you know what that means, right? They're looking for a reason to not give him his buyout.
And that's the funny thing. It's a $1 million buyout. That is one of the cheapest buyouts in college sports. Deion Sanders is 33.6. Steve Sarkisian at Texas is 60 million.
You know what? Who's the Mike Norvell? No, it's not Mike Norvell. DeBoer, Alabama.
60 million, yeah.
Yeah. I think it was over $70 million when the season started. It might be 60-something mm-hmm. now. It's crazy, right? Like, I agree. I said it years ago when they were still winning. He is a great, great defensive mind. He's a great football mind. But his success was largely and mostly due to having Tom Brady. Now, I will tell you, I do think Tom Brady needed Bill Belichick. I think they were great for each other. But Brady went on. He still won. But he probably doesn't become the person he is without, and the quarterback he is without Bill Belichick. And I think Brady would tell you that. But this is not a surprise to me. And when he got the job at North Carolina, my first thought was, this is going to end poorly. And I kept saying, now, granted, there's no guarantee this is going to happen still, and it might still backfire because Syracuse's quarterback is out, and they're not that good mm-hmm. right now. But I just kept thinking, I cannot wait to see Fran Brown beat Bill Belichick. Like, that would be amazing. And I think it could happen even with Syracuse's situation.
Well, and that's the thing too. It's one of those things. Don't look at their record. North Carolina's 2-3. Their two wins are against FCS opponents. Their three losses against FBS opponents. None of them close. I mean, they are just getting run over by anyone that has even similar standards of athletes to them. But it's going to be something to keep an eye on over the next few weeks. Doesn't seem like it's going to happen immediately, but it does seem to be trending in that direction.
I mean, they play Syracuse and UNC play Halloween night at the Dome. Okay, and I don't know by then if Bill Belichick's even going to be the coach of the Tar Heels.
Yeah, honestly, it's going to be something to keep an eye on. Salvo, before we let you go, schedule for today. You did mention Sean McDermott's going to speak probably here pretty soon with the media.
Yeah, he'll be talking a little before noon, and we'll get an update on injured players' participation today. And then the injury designations for the game won't come out until Saturday this week, guys, so we won't have that like we normally do on a Friday. It'll be Saturday this week.
All right, sounds good. Sal, we'll let you get ready for practice then, and we'll talk again soon.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
All right, Sal, thank you.
Sal Capaccio there on the Wester Hotline. We'll also be talking with Paul Hamilton coming up in about 15 minutes at 11 o'clock. Get ready for tonight's game. Let CRS Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical Excellence intercept your heating bills. Enter now at WGR550.com for a chance to win $1,200 towards your home heating costs. Don't fumble this opportunity. Contest does end January 4th of 2026. TRS Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical Excellence, powering tomorrow, comforting today. 803-0550, the number to call. You want to give your thoughts on tonight's opener for the Sabres. You want to talk Bill Belichick? I'm happy to do that. I think it's one of the craziest things I've seen in sports in a long time. It's embarrassing on all fronts for everybody. Or you want to talk Bills? Love to hear your thoughts as well. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. Tailgate Trivia is back, presented by Total Sports Enterprise Buffalo. Listen during every Bills game for your chance to call in, answer the trivia question, and win autographed Bills merch, courtesy of TSE Buffalo. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, wrapping up hour number one here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. The Sabres are in action tonight to open up their season at home against the New York Rangers. We'll be talking to Paul Hamilton here in just a few minutes. Real quick, though, on the Bill Belichick thing. I mentioned it. I think it's one of the most embarrassing things I've seen in sports in a while. And in part, it's because it came in weird.
Right.
And it's leaving weirder. There were two documentaries that have been axed that were supposed to happen. If you remember, there was thoughts that there were going to be a Hard Knocks College edition at North Carolina.
Yep.
Kaput. Bills obviously take over as Hard Knocks, and that moves on. They also were going to do a Hulu documentary, you know, inside North Carolina football.
Right.
Kaput. Gone. Everything going on internally within the program. And then also even just opening night for them against TCU, where they start off hot and get blown out. You go to the post-game podium, and it's Bill Belichick in front of a bunch of balloons like it's a baby shower because of the Carolina blue. I mean, it just looked so weird. It's never looked right. And then, if you missed it, we were talking with it just a few minutes ago with Sal Capaccio, the buyout clauses. Ali Conley reported
it is obnoxious
that North Carolina is looking for recruiting violations to shrink an already obnoxiously low buyout. It's $1 million. Alabama, not that long ago, following the loss to Florida State, was genuinely discussing, or at least the fans were genuinely discussing, removing or firing Kalen DeBoer. His buyout was around $60 million. It started this year around $70. And they're not having the best time in the NIL era in terms of just how much money is there. It's the northern programs like Notre Dame, Ohio State, and the Texas programs, Tech and Texas, that are really dominating. Bama is having a tough time. Nick Saban, in his last few years, was constantly like going to boosters and essentially begging for money for more NIL. And they were talking about $60 million to fire a coach in his second year.
Yeah.
North Carolina's just trying to shrink that $1 million a little bit. Why?
And so I have been fascinated for over like the past year with the investigative work of Pablo Torre.
Yeah.
And his LeBron James-like run that he's been going on, especially over this past summer, and it culminates with the looking into the NFLPA.
Mm-hmm.
That run starts, though, with what he was investigating with Bill Belichick. So I am not surprised about any of this. The downfall of Bill Belichick will need to be investigated is what I would be saying if Pablo Torre didn't find out.
It hadn't already done it. It's just his last now 5 years as a coach have been embarrassing, to say it lightly. I mean, it's been some of the most embarrassing you've seen. I don't think it's going to tarnish his legacy. I kind of been dancing around that. I don't think it'll tarnish it, but I don't think this is also going to be Michael Jordan with the Wizards where everyone's like, yeah, that happened, whatever. Like, we move on. Like, you know, look at the Chicago stuff. It won't be Bill Walsh going to Stanford and being a bad college coach. I think it will be a little bit more where everyone's kind of like, yeah, the Patriots stuff was great. He was awesome. The end, though, was pretty awful, and it got weird. And it got weird fast.
Considering that it's getting weird fast already, halfway through a year, you've got coach and athletic director going, I support Bill Belichick. And Bill Belichick going, I'm here to coach at North Carolina.
Yeah, I was going to say, we were talking about it with Sal, and he mentioned the statement, and I thought about it. And I'm like, man, we're using the word statement loosely here because it's both a sentence each. Like, and it's not what you're expecting. It's very hollow, and it does not feel like they're going in any sort of good direction. It does feel like this is going to wrap up fairly soon. I don't know about within this month, but this is the only year.
This is also what happens when you surround yourself with nothing but yes men.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Yeah. That's. I mean, we heard about it when he was looking for a job in the NFL, that he had just a bunch of his guys that he worked with.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
With for years, they were essentially, you know, a counsel for a king.
Yep.
Where just are, well, what's going on in the NFL? What jobs could I maybe get? I mean, you're right. Like, he is kind of the epitome of, I surround myself with yes men. Nothing I do will ever be wrong. 803-0550, the number to call. Paul Hamilton on the way next as we get ready for tonight's season opener against the New York Rangers. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, you're listening to WGR.
It's Paul Hamilton.
There we go. A little ABBA action. Get us ready for tonight. ABBA will not be part of the goal song discussion, which is frustrating.
Awful. Abhorrent.
Immensely frustrating. Yes. But you know what that music means. To the Western Hotline. Paul Hamilton joins the show as the Sabres officially get their season underway at home tonight against the New York Rangers. Paul, how are we doing this morning?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing well. Are you excited for the grind to get going? I know you've been, you know, obviously back in the beat for a while here with the season started, but, you know, for many people, it gets going tonight.
Yeah, I was excited in July for the grind to get going, but unfortunately, it wound up being the Bills grind for a while instead of the Sabres grind for me.
for most people, that's beach weather. Paul's like, this is hockey weather. I know it's 90, but it's hockey weather. Good for you.
Well, we were in the 30s last night, so.
You know. Well, that's true. October's finally arrived. It took a little bit, but here we are. I'm in a hoodie and jeans, and I had frost on my car this morning. That was an awakening moment.
Grow up.
I know. Paul, though, Sabres back at it tonight. They got some good injury news yesterday. Owen Power and Matias Samuelsson look to be back in the lineup tonight. It's not their entire blue line back, but it is a good sign to get the season started.
Yeah, and as Lindy Ruff said, hey, I'm not giving the Rangers my lineup, but you guys were here yesterday. Mm-hmm. So that basically means, yeah, Owen Powers, okay, he's going to be playing. You know, so just trying to turn my computer off here. You know me and technology is – there we go.
Hey, we did it.
And it was our website that was doing it to me.
There you go.
Surprises nobody. Paul, all about the grind, but with the Sabres coming back into this one, Alex Lyon going to get the start, UPL obviously on injured reserve. And the Sabres did make a move, though. They claimed Colton Ellis to kind of help ease some concerns. Georgiev was not good in preseason. It showed, and the Sabres kind of reacted accordingly.
Yeah, but if I'm Devin Levi, I'm going, excuse me?
Right.
Because really, if you take a look at those two goaltenders and their numbers in the American Hockey League last year, they were almost identical. Levi's goals against was a little lower, and Ellis's save percentage was higher. But overall, they were basically the same goaltender in the American Hockey League last year. The Blues were a little surprised, thinking, well, if the Sabres wanted a goaltender, they probably want somebody with experience, and Ellis has never played in an NHL game, but he's gone through the development process, so that's over with. You don't, you know, he spent 3 years in the East Coast League, 2 years in the American Hockey League, put up very good numbers in the AHL, and now it's 25 years old, and it's like, all right, it's your time now. Either you take advantage of it or you don't. And they apparently what Lindy Ruff was saying yesterday, that he's been on their radar for a bit, and there was an opportunity that they just felt they couldn't pass up on, you know, when he became available to them. So they made the move, and you're right, Georgiev just, and I'm not surprised by that. I'm more surprised they actually signed him than I am that it didn't work out, because in his first preseason game, he made 11 saves on 11 shots. He was solid, you know. He didn't make any fantastic saves because he didn't have to. They played pretty well in front of him, but he made the saves that he had to make. And after that, it just blew up on him. I mean, his goals against, his save percentage were horrendous, and he played more than any other goaltender for the Sabres. And, you know, look at the overtime goal the other night. Yeah, that was three bad plays by three of their better players. I get that. But by the time Pittsburgh got into the zone, Georgiev was like in the slot. He wasn't anywhere near his net. He had come way out. So, I mean, he had no chance whatsoever. I don't know what he was thinking at all, you know, being out where he was. But by the time the puck came across to Crosby, I mean, there was just nothing but net to shoot at, and the goaltender wasn't even within 5 feet of him.
Yeah, it was one of those tough scene kind of looks there too. But lying in net, though, and I'd imagine that when UPL is healthy, they will be splitting time here. But it does seem like that there's a lot of hope that goaltending improvement is going to be the biggest way to help get them some more points in the standings, and it starts with Lyon tonight.
Yeah, and this is the first time he's really gotten an opportunity like this. Yeah, he took over the Florida net that first year they were in the Stanley Cup Finals, and as a matter of fact, ruined the Sabres' playoff hopes with a 2-1 victory.
No, thanks for reminding us of that, Paul.
In Florida, made 40 saves in that game. Had that been a 2-1 Buffalo win, Buffalo would have made the playoffs and Florida would not have. But he wasn't really their starting goaltender. He just wound up in the net because of injury and, you know, played the best he had ever played in the National Hockey League. But on the other side of that coin, here is a great opportunity. You want to be a starting goalie? Here it is. You may be in the net for a week. You may be in the net for 2 weeks. You may be in the net for a month. But if he plays lights out and shows that he is very capable of being a good number one goalie, Lukanen's not getting the net. They're not. That's that. Sorry. Wait your turn. Is what's going to amount. That's going to amount to, because if Lyon's doing the job and winning games, you're not taking him out, and that means so this is his opportunity to grab a starting job, and if he does it, tough luck to whoever's on injured or whatever. That's pro sports.
Paul Hamilton on the Western Hotline. Sabres taking on the New York Rangers tonight at KeyBank Center. No Michael Kesselring in this one. He's on injured reserve. It doesn't seem like he's going to be back for this one. But Josh Doan, the other piece in that J.J. Paterka trade, will be in the lineup. Connor Timmins, another newcomer into this lineup. What do you think might be the impact there of Josh Doan? Because he seems to have a nice little mix of that energy, tenacity, and a little bit of talent to sprinkle on top of that.
Well, that's why they wanted him. And both sides have said this. Both Utah's GM and Buffalo's GM have said Doan was a huge piece of that. And Utah's GM, when he was at the press conference talking about Paterka, said, we had to make a decision. Do we really want Paterka? Do we really want him that bad? Because Adams made it very clear, if Doan isn't part of the trade, there is no trade. And he never wavered from that. And it's just like, you know, call me when you know, that he wasn't doing anything else with them. It was going to be Kesselring. He wanted Kesselring and he wanted Doan, and he wasn't going to come off it. So Utah's GM said, look, we decided that J.J. Paterka was a piece that we really, really needed on our team and really wanted. And finally we said, do we want to trade Doan? No, we don't, but we have to and we're going to, and they did. So he was a piece, and a piece that many around the NHL, if you talk to folks, think has a good upside to them. And I know I've referenced this before, but I'll bring it up again. Talking to Ray Ferraro, or I wasn't actually talking to him. I was listening to his podcast talking about Doan. And he talked about how you could see in the beginning of the year, last year was his rookie year, that he just wasn't quite up to it. You know, he was feeling his way through. And he said all of a sudden it was like a light went off. And he was playing really, really well and then really improving by leaps and bounds by the second half of the year. He's got a very good shot. Many feel there's a good offensive upside here. Why? Because he's around the net and he's competing around the net. And one thing I think Buffalo fans are going to like is he likes to be in the middle of everything. You know, maybe not as goofy as Marchand is, but still, you know, if something's going on, he'll be there. And he'll be in the middle of it. And, you know, he's the type of player that other teams aren't going to like playing against, which is the Sabres haven't had a lot of that the past 14 years. So, you know, and we'll see where it goes offensively. I mean, he got a lot of power play time in the preseason. And quite honestly, I didn't think he embarrassed himself at all. So, you know, we'll see where it goes with him. And he did score, I'm going by memory, it was something like 27, 28 goals in the American Hockey League, and it wasn't in a full season. So he has scored goals in the AHL. Whether that translates here to the NHL, we're going to find out.
Paul Hamilton here on the Wester Hotline. Paul, speaking about offense, a player that I'm curious to watch this season is because mainly we really didn't get to see much of him last year, even though he was part of a trade earlier in the season, Josh Norris. You know, just looking at the score sheet, he looked to have performed very, very well in the preseason. I think, what was it, 6 points? And he's a player, though, that all the physical talent seems to be there. All the hockey talent seems to be there. But he's only played 60-plus games once in his career. That year was great in 21-22. He had 35 goals and 55 points. But outside of that, the injury issues have plagued him. He's been around 50 games per year for most of his career.
Yeah, 35 goals in 60 games. It gives you an idea. This is a guy that is going to score 30 to 35 if he stays healthy. I don't think there's any question about it. So, you know, a lot has been made of, well, who's going to make up Paterka's goals? Well, if Norris stays healthy, he'll do it himself. And then what about Kulik? You know, I really like what they're doing with Kulik. I mean, as their number two center, he's centering Tuck and Zucker. I mean, some veteran players, and I think that's a really solid unit, you know, to roll out there after the Norris line. And as Lindy Ruff said, he's hoping that Tuck and Kulik build the same kind of chemistry that Norris and Thompson have already built. And then you got two solid lines. I mean, a good top six, you know, that I think you can go to war with and get some goals. So when you're talking about where the goal's going to come from, you know, Kulik last year scored 14. I think he can do better. There's some things that he can at least double that. You know, and then if you get 35 out of Norris, well, if you want to throw Cousins in there, that makes up for Cousins and that makes up for Paterka, you know, from a goal scoring standpoint. But the talent that Norris has and what he can do, and he's very good in the defensive zone too, and just winning faceoffs on the power play, on special teams in general, I mean, is going to be big, because part of the reason the Sabres struggle on the power play is they never have the puck. You lose a faceoff, the other team gets it, down it goes. Well, it's going to be 30 seconds minimum until you're back. And that's if you get in the zone. And that was a big if for that team last year. So, all right, you get stopped at the blue line. Puck goes back down again. Just because you lost the faceoff, you might have blown a minute and 20 seconds of your power play. So you win the faceoff, you're set up. And now you're going. So that, I think, is going to be key to try to help improve a power play. You also have two good shots in the circles now with Norris, who's not afraid to shoot it. Paterka, for some reason, didn't want to shoot it from that circle. I don't know why, because he has a great shot, but he rarely scored in the power play. But Norris will let it go. And talking to Tage Thompson yesterday, and that's an interview you'll hear in the pregame today, he talked about how Norris, yeah, people talk about him as a shooter, but he said he doesn't get enough credit as a playmaker. You know, he said he's a really deceptive playmaker also, that maybe he doesn't get enough credit for that. So that'll be interesting to watch as we go along too.
Paul, when you mention players that can be some playmakers for this team, a little bit of facilitators as well, I look at Zach Benson, a guy that if you like the charts, for example, I know I'm speaking to the wrong person on that one, but even the eyeballs, you could see that Benson likes to set things up. He is trying to see plays a couple of plays ahead, and he is a player that they didn't convert on a lot of the chances that he would set up for last year, but Benson playing with Norris and Thompson does also seem like a potential boon for the first-round pick from a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and just, you know, there's a very, in my mind, a time and a place for analytics. There's no question about it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I don't hate it. I just don't like it that it's you go with analytics and nothing else.
Right.
I said, it drives me insane in baseball, but that's another conversation. You know,
why?
I
what happened? Sorry, Paul. I had to do it.
But I think, you know, Lindy Ruff believes this too. He should have all the information at his fingertips so he can make an intelligent decision. And at the end of the day, think about it. Analytics and the eye test usually line up. Not always, but usually line up. And Adams talks about what they do with their analytics department when it doesn't. When the analytics department comes up with something they're not seeing, now they sit down, they have a discussion about it. Why? Why is what we're seeing different from what the numbers say? And then they go over it. So that's I like the usage of analytics that way. So I got off on a tangent here. What are we talking about?
We were talking about Benson. My apologies.
Yeah, thank you. No, I'm the idiot that went off on a tangent. Couldn't remember what you said. I got you now. I'm ready. The senility just wore off. But yeah, with Benson, he is. When people misunderstood me when I said I think it might be best for him to spend a little bit of time in Rochester, it wasn't because I thought he was a bad player. It wasn't because I didn't think he could compete in the NHL. He's great at shielding pucks and making plays and those types of things. But I think you need more than 28 points out of your top line left winger. So my thought was if he went to Rochester for a little bit, he might be able to regain a little bit of the scoring touch that he had in junior. Just get confidence in it. You know, I still think he's going to eventually put up points in the NHL because he's done it at every level. That's all I felt that if you put him down there for a little bit, get him some confidence offensively where he sees the puck go in the net a few times, and then bring him back up with the rest of the skill set that he has. I just thought that might help him offensively a little bit contribute. But there's no question with the other parts of his game and how valuable they are. I still don't understand how he can protect pucks with his size the way he does. I think a lot of it is leg strength. But he can be on his knees and protect the puck. And still, the other team's not going to get it off of him.
Sheer willpower, Paul. I think that's what it is.
That's probably what it is. I mean, that's probably what it is.
And I lack that because I'm going to have the chicken parm sub today.
The whole 2 feet?
Maybe. Depends on how miserable the maybe. It depends on how miserable the game is. I might be like sad eating it. I don't know, Paul, but we're going to find out
today.
There
was a day where I could do that when I weighed a lot, but now that I've lost some weight and I'm not afraid to say it on the air, and mm-hmm. I do take a weight loss drug and it's worked very well for me, but mm-hmm. it also kind of takes your craving away for something like that. So I know there's zero chance I would be able to even eat half of that right now. And quite honestly, you know, that's what it does to you. It just kind of helps you. And, you know, I'm wearing all new clothes now. All the old clothes are somebody at Goodwill's wearing them now. So if you need any of my clothes, head over to Goodwill, Derek. And I don't think they'll fit. I don't think they'll fit you. But if you keep eating that sub,
you'll be
head
there.
On over because you will fit into some of those clothes.
Paul, I'm doing it for journalism, okay? We're finding out things today.
Big J journalism.
Big J, capital J journalism, me versus the sub. I'm not eating that alone. Are you insane? They brought samples of things yesterday, and I was breathing heavy after eating like a quarter of it.
If you gave me like a quarter of it, I'm sure it'd be delicious.
Yes.
I probably could get through a quarter. It is funny. Like,
I'll let you know where I'm sitting, Paul.
If I do buy a sub, it's funny because I spend all day kind of cutting off a slice, and next thing I know, I'm still eating it the next day. Mm-hmm. One sub.
Oh, yeah.
It becomes a nice little long-term investment sort of thing. I do like it. But, yes, for Capital J Journalism, me and some friends are going to eat this thing today, see how it goes.
Paul, I did have one more question here before we let you go and get ready for tonight. Ryan McLeod is a player mm-hmm. that I really liked last year. He also was top five in goal scoring for the Sabres last year, hitting 20 goals. I like the different dimension he brought this team, and I'm curious to see how you think he maybe fits into this new group as well that they've got with Norris. And it's not a ton of differences, but just maybe that second year for McLeod with the Sabres.
You know what I'm curious about, and I don't have an answer for it. Is 20 goals his ceiling, or can it even mm-hmm. be better?
That's what I was wondering. Is that the high pointers all of a sudden they maybe unlocked something with more ice time for him?
Can he get it to 25? And I think maybe he can. And you know, everybody thought, you know, when they made the trade, well, he's only scored 12 or 13. You know, whatever. You know what it is. You make a trade, and people are all like, "What are you doing that for? You gave up number one pick, who by the way is like 5'8 or 5'9, and they have like 20 of those. So if you get rid of one of them, but the Sabres needed the skill set that McLeod brings to the table. Speed, first of all. There are some that think he's faster than McDavid. I am mm-hmm. not one of them, but I think he's second in the league behind McDavid. And the speed, I think, really helped him. He got a little bit of power play time once the Sabres ran into some injuries, and he took advantage of that. But I think it helped him offensively because he can get back defensively very quickly with that speed that he has. And he would, like, come up on defensemen and just blow around him because of the speed. And they couldn't corral him. And it really, I think, produced some offensive opportunities for him. But even if this is it and 20 goals, I think to be a guy who is, you know, right behind your top six, a guy that can play both ends of the ice, can contribute 20 goals, I think that's great. And even if Matt Savoy, and he is with the Edmonton Oilers now, becomes a great player with the Oilers, I always say there's nothing wrong with both teams being happy with their trade. I mean, the Oilers will, of course, be happy if that happens, and I think the Sabres are very happy with what they got in McLeod because it's something they really needed and didn't have on their team. So I know fans, they like to think, well, boy, we really killed them on that trade, and that's fun. I know that's fun, but I don't know. As long as the player you got back is overachieving, and I think I could say that about McLeod, mm-hmm. it doesn't really matter what Savoy does in Edmonton because then you're happy with your end of the trade.
Right, absolutely. All right, Paul.
Finally, Paul, I got one more for you. Ryan Johnson has himself a heck of a preseason training camp. He ends up on the Sabres opening night roster. I was impressed with how he was skating through the preseason here. He has always kind of been this, you know, should be the first guy up defensively call-up sort of thing, if not for the Sabres typically carrying 7-8 defensemen into a season. But Johnson now finally making the roster here for opening night. What do you think is going to happen here with the plan for RJ coming in here? RJ 2.0.
It sounds like he might get the opportunity in Boston. It sounds like Bryson, and I don't mm-hmm. think Bryson played poorly in the preseason. It sounds like he's going to get the, and if you looked at practice yesterday, that's what the impression I got that Bryson's going to get the first opportunity. But just talking to Lindy Ruff a few minutes ago, he's very impressed with Johnson and basically indicated that maybe Johnson will get the opportunity. You don't want to totally commit to that because if the Sabres beat the Rangers 4-0 and the defense plays really well, then why would you make any changes?
Exactly.
Yeah, so he doesn't want to get backed into a corner with it, but it sounds like Johnson might get the opportunity in Boston to play. And yesterday Ruff talked about it a little bit. It kind of boils down to experience. I mean, Bryson has the NHL experience, and Bryson takes some heat around here, and for what he's here for, he understands what he's here for. He knows he's going to be this number 7 or 8 defenseman. He knew that when he signed his contract. There was so much hand-wringing when he signed a 1-year contract. It's like, people, it doesn't matter. The one thing I like about him is he's always ready. He can go a month without playing and has gone a month without playing, jumps into the lineup, and he doesn't look like he's rusty. He has some things that maybe he's not as good at. He's not the biggest thing in the world, but there are also some things he is good at, breaking the puck out. And, You know, he can play very well. He has the odd game where it doesn't go very well for him. But just because he's not putting people through the back wall doesn't mean that, you know, he can't come in. Now, if he's one of your six defensemen all year long, well, maybe we're having a different conversation. But to be your number seven or number eight guy who's always ready, who never complains, even if you send him to Rochester like they did last year, never complains, figures out, all right, what do I have to do to get better to get back up there? I really think he's a perfect fit for what they signed him for. So, you know, as I said, it sounds like all things equal, he'll get the first opportunity today. And Johnson, I think, has a pretty good chance of getting the next opportunity in Boston.
We'll see how some of this stuff shakes out. Starting tonight at 7 p.m., puck drop at KeyBank Center. Sabres taking on the Rangers.
Paul, love that the season's getting started, though. I mean, Yankees got ended last night, so, you know, you got all the focus on Sabres time now.
Yeah, now, sorry I had to put off a half hour for you guys. it was going to be 10:30, but swear at Lindy Ruft. I mean, he planned his press conference where we couldn't do it at 10:30, so it was, I couldn't join you. So break into Lindy's office and tell him that's unacceptable to have your show upended like that.
Lindy, always against the media.
Yes, right? Always.
Paul, thank you so much. We'll talk again later.
Take care, guys.
See you, Paul.
Paul Hamilton there on the Wester Hotline. I'm really glad I got to that Ryan McLeod question because he's a player I quickly fell in love with his style last year. The trade was interesting when it was made. I mean, I kind of was happy they were able to move anything off of Savoy.
Right.
I've talked about that a lot with some of these prospects of it just goes on too long where the value depreciates. McLeod was somebody, though, that came in. One of the more exciting acquisitions they had just because him on the shorthand, his speed, Paul mentioned it, just he could be so dangerous defensively that he would get them into opportunities that they were better with less guys
right.
than they were with more guys. It was so fun to watch. And I am really into the idea that they have not reached his peak yet as a goal scorer
and
the ability he has.
I had to bring up Ryan Johnson as well because he played so well that a player that was expected to be on the opening night roster, your namesake,
mm-hmm.
Zach Jones,
woo.
Ends up in Rochester instead.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Ryan Johnson, he was – there's questions about, is he going to crack this roster? Is he going to be one of the next bottom pair defensemen for this group at least?
Mm-hmm.
And see where it goes from there. Because, I mean, I don't think you're getting past Dahlin, Power, Kesselring, Byram.
Right.
But if you can at least be on the bottom pair this year, I think some fans will be plenty welcome to it because he does have some good skating ability.
803-0550, the number to call. Want to give your thoughts on tonight's Sabres opening up the season against the Rangers. We've also got Thursday Night Football tonight as well, an NFC East divisional matchup, Philadelphia and the New York Giants. In Philadelphia, not been playing well, they are 4-1.
So we're throwing a 1-4 Giants team.
Yeah, baby.
And Eagles with a confounding offense and throwing Thursday Night Football into it. That is a powerful stink coming from the blender.
Thank goodness for baseball. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
We talked on the phone while he drove. We had somebody drive him, he and his wife from Cleveland. And so we were able to send him the information to study, talk to him on the phone as he drove down, gave him a break, let him then come in the facility, and we got a chance to meet him last night and then met this morning.
It's about a 5-hour drive. How long was the phone call?
I'm not sure how long it was. We just tried to cover all the base pieces of information. I mean, you like to knock out personnel and formations and motions and the easy stuff. And then when you get in here, get the nuts and bolts. So just the easy stuff that he knew, and it all sounds familiar. So he'll be ready to run.
Hey, Bengals. Joe. Hey, Joe, how's the it's Zach with the Bengals. You ready? You're a Bengal. Okay, cool. How's the offensive line? Bad. Okay, cool.
Zach Taylor there, Bengals head coach, talking about the weird gettings too of they're going to trade for a guy immediately and get him starting right away. Joe Flacco is going to get the start against Green Bay. We'll have the fun potential at beating the same team twice in a year on different teams. That should be pretty cool.
That would be uncanny.
I don't think it'll happen. I stay with this. I think why this has happened is, and why they didn't reach out to someone like Jameis Winston, is they couldn't keep convincing themselves of sending out a quarterback to throw 2 to 3 picks every game and not really have the offense moving and just, yeah, we're still trying to win, guys.
Have they not watched Joe Flacco this year?
Well, that's the thing is Flacco, I think, maybe points to at least he doesn't have that history, and he has a history of showing up randomly and performing well. The difference is, though, he's many years older.
can't really move. The offensive line is really bad. I think this is also just a team that your starter's down, but you started the year 2-0, and it's still somewhat early in the season, and you want to try to not immediately go, well, screw that, we're done.
You cannot also convince the fan base that Jake Browning is going to get through this at this point. He played himself out of the job.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is, I think that's why they made the move. I think they would have loved to have just kept Jake Browning in and ride this out. But when he was throwing 2 to 3 picks every game he was starting, it just it became untenable. You can't keep throwing him out there. Because then eventually, we're all just going to expect the coach to be like, you know what, guys, honestly, we're all watching Caleb Downs tape, okay? Y'all know we need help on on defense. We're looking at the best safety. Congratulations, everyone. Joe will be back next year.
They'd be outraged at the fact that he's not saying an offensive lineman there, Zach.
Probably true.
So there's
But even then, they can't do it. I kind of like the idea that a guy got traded for and is immediately starting. We'll see how this goes. It doesn't happen often. The one I think about regularly is Baker and him sort of saving his career.
Right.
With the Rams. I mean, he had, 3 days to figure? Because I think he was on a short week.
It was a short week,
They played Thursday Night Football, and he's traded there, Tuesday. And it was like, okay, you got to figure it out. And this isn't a 5-hour car drive where he stays in the same state. This is going from Carolina to the Rams.
He's not even traded for it. Baker had asked for his release.
That's right, and he's picked up by the Rams. That's right.
Yes.
But he goes in, and he plays against the Raiders. It's a 17-16 win. He was 22 for 35, 230, and a touchdown. And he plays pretty well for the Rams the rest of the year. He throws 2 total picks. He throws 5 touchdowns. But it's good enough for him to salvage career. Now Baker, I think, is undoubtedly a top 10 quarterback in the league since he's arrived in Tampa. That's not going to happen with Flacco. Right. I think this is just more – I think this is just PR of, no, we're not giving up on the season. We know we needed to make a change at quarterback. They can't afford Kirk Cousins because of his massive contract that Atlanta signed him to. So they're not going to do that. Well, let's go for the team that just benched their guy to start a rookie. I mean, ultimately, I think that's kind of what it ends up being.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what happens. I'm sort of curious to keep an eye on it just to see, is he actually getting Chase and Higgins the ball? Like, are they actually able to move the offense? Maybe. We're going to find out. We do have a game tonight to get Week 6 underway, Thursday Night Football, Eagles-Giants. Eagles, Bills, both 4-1s, actually a few 4-1 teams, but those were the two that lost to stop the undefeated run. And it's funny. They were both undefeated with both pretty glaring problems. The one difference is the Bills' problem, you could arguably point to with it, its injuries, their defense. They do not have their full complement of guys, and it's going to be a while till they have their full complement of guys. They're just surviving. The Eagles is not the same issue at all. Their defense is just fine. Arguably
matter of fact,
winning them games.
Yeah, matter of fact, they're fantastic.
Their offense is the problem. The different issue there is their offensive skill position players are all there. They're dealing with some injuries on the line. Don't get me wrong. Lane Johnson's had some of his issues that he's been dealing with. They've had some other ones as well. But for the most part, the guys you expect to make big plays are there. And it hasn't meant anything. They have been a struggle to watch. They're in the bottom 5, bottom 10 of most offensive statistical categories, namely running the ball. Saquon's going from 6 yards per rush to, I think he's down to 3.2, 3.3 yards per rush. A.J. Brown, I think he's gotten through 30 yards this year, I think now twice, based off this last game against Denver. And we were 5 weeks into the season, 4 weeks into the season, because that was before the Denver game, and we were already getting pieces from The Athletic. Diana Rossini talking about how both receivers, Devonta Smith and A.J. Brown, were upset in their roles and what was going on in the offense. They look like a broken unit. This has always, though, been a very volatile organization under Nick Sirianni. They will have years where they look like the cream of the crop. They look like the Avengers out there. They will have other years where they start 11-1 and lose 6 straight to end the year, or 5 straight, whatever it was, and then lose to Tampa in a wild card round. Then last year, they pretty much dominated after, I think, starting, 2-2 or something like that last year. They then just go on an insane run, and outside of the Rams game, dominating the playoffs.
And the part of it is also, when it comes to Brown, it is also a Jalen Hurts problem.
Oh, yeah.
The targets to receptions, that percentage is ghastly. It's almost at 50. It's just above 50%. 36 targets for A.J. Brown, 19 receptions. But the other thing that you're seeing happen here is against Denver, they start just taking deep shots left and right. And in the too high era, it's not going to have such a large completion percentage. The times where Denver was running cover three, Riley Moss is on Devonta Smith.
And he's just getting
it didn't
down
work
now.
For him. But the thing is that there's no creativity within the run game either. And then the Denver game was also an overcorrection. You hear that the wide receivers are upset. So they throw the ball, and Saquon Barkley gets the ball six times that game.
Mm-hmm.
He has his best yards per carry on the afternoon with 30 yards on six carries. Now's the day you're not going to feed him the rock?
When everything's telling you, like, that's actually working. That's
it's actually working a little bit right now. Now you're not going to give him the football. This offensive coordinator has never called plays before at any level, and it's showing glaringly here this year. And it's the lack of creativity within the run game, the run blocking schemes. Like, something is off about it to where their fundamental reason for offensive success is not there. If not for the defense looking like it did in the Super Bowl against Kansas City, they would be in a lot of trouble right now.
And you can even look to them too. They took advantage of that weird week where everyone was blocking kicks. I mean, the Rams score looks very different than how that game actually was. It ends 33-26. It's because it's a return for a touchdown on that block kick to end the game. Tampa, they're up really big early, and then Tampa roars back. It's a Baker Mayfield pick that kind of ends that. And then, you know, they have not looked right all year. This is sort of the same thing we've been saying about the Bills. I will continue to say this, though. I'd rather my team play their best football in January rather than in September. I do still stand by that. I do look at some things, though, and wonder, is it ever going to get better? We've talked about it yesterday, that the stuff you can hide versus the stuff you're going to have to live with. And if the Bills don't make a move in the secondary, I've mentioned it, I think it's just going to be something they have to live with. Where the Bills' offense, I think they can hide the fact that their receivers can't really stretch the field. They don't have a ton of speed. I think they can live with that.
They can live with it.
The run game is very good. Their tight ends seem to be really taking that next step, namely Dalton Kincaid. And even then, the separation scores are pretty good. They're able to move the ball. They score a lot. The Eagles, you can't hide from a bad coordinator. Not when your head coach is Nick Sirianni. And no disrespect to him, he lives off of great coordinators. And they're going to get to a point where it is just – you have too much skill. This is where they become volatile, is because guys are getting frustrated that how is this not working? And while I think Sirianni has proven to be a very good culture guy, he kind of fits the city of Philadelphia perfectly, you cannot hide a bad coordinator. It's where, you know, we were wondering too, the next few weeks, once the Bills are starting to get their complement back on defense, okay, what is Bobby Babich? You know Joe Brady's a good coordinator. I know some get frustrated with him, but you know he's a good coordinator. We don't know yet about Bobby Babich. And we're kind of finding out with Philadelphia, they're having an issue here. And I don't really know how it's going to get fixed. They have everyone there. It's not like, well, A.J. Brown's not here. He'll fix the passing game. They're all there.
And it might be a good remedy for this team that just lost their first game to have the Giants twice in 3 weeks.
And they are 7.5-point favorites tonight against the Giants.
On the road.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in Thursday Night Football. The fact that you throw Thursday Night Football into this, though, with the short week and how teams typically have a tendency to underperform on Thursday nights, especially the ones that are favorites.
Mm-hmm.
I'm scared this game might be like 13-9.
Giddy up. That's where
No. Not giddy up.
How much of this game I'm really going to watch, honestly?
Go Sabres.
I have the Sabres going on tonight. I'm very excited to watch that. We've got playoff baseball that's going on kind of in the middle of this. If this game starts ugly early and the fact that it's going to be on a streaming service and I can't just, you know, flip through the channels
that's
real quick.
Right, yeah.
I'm not going to find this game. I'll watch the highlights tomorrow. I'll look through on Twitter to see what's going on. Like the way the Eagles have been playing, and while I'm a big Jackson Dark guy, but Malik Nabers ain't playing. I wonder how much the Giants are going to be able to score. Yeah, if it's ugly early, I'll back off. I'm good. By the way, the Eagles.
Back off. I'm good.
By the way, the Eagles offensive coordinator, Kevin Petullo, he's been with the organization since 21. And that's also something we can get into that maybe towards the offseason. But I have started to really move away from hiring inside. I think for a lot of organizations, it becomes an echo chamber.
Right.
And you're not adding new ideas, new functions to your team. You're just kind of continuing the process. And while sometimes that absolutely works, Brady is ultimately the internal hire.
Yeah.
Other times it doesn't work. look at the exact same position. Ken Dorsey is an internal hire, was a bit of a disaster for them.
It's also weird because coaching is a brotherhood, but it, like, you gather a lot of connections working in coaching.
Oh, yeah.
And there could be a guy that you worked with years ago and all of a sudden, like, hey, there's this spot that opened up. I remember working with this guy. Let's bring him in.
Yeah, we should give him a call.
We should give him a call and see if he's available for this. So it is kind of fascinating that now it's just all being internalized, which is kind of uncommon.
I don't think it's not uncommon.
It's just
– it's not always the wrong thing
to do. It
goes
against the grain a little
bit. Yeah, but you're seeing it in Baltimore too. Zach Orr. They brought – he's an internal hire and a defensive coordinator. It's been a bad time. I think there is something to bringing in kind of like a fresh face and new ideas, different ideas that can get a team over the hump or push that to that next level. 803-0550, the number to call. A reminder, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. It only takes 30 minutes once a year to get a potential life-saving screening. Schedule your mammogram today at Roswell Park with two convenient locations in Buffalo and Williamsville. Visit roswellpark.org/mammograph for a quick appointment. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sabres Live coming up at noon. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here as we wrap up a Thursday here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Obviously, we've been mentioning Sabres tonight, 6 p.m. pregame, 7 p.m. puck drop down at KeyBank Center as the Sabres open up their season against the New York Rangers. We mentioned football there as well. Thursday night football, Eagles at the Giants. That game is going to be over on our sister station, the Bet 1520. I believe kickoff is set for 8:15. It is 8:15. Amazon Prime as well. And then, of course, we also have baseball. Two games today. Phillies Dodgers at 6, and then it's Brewers Cubs at 9. So for the first time, it feels like in the entire postseason, we're actually getting a Dodgers game not last on the docket. I might actually watch some Dodgers baseball in the postseason. That's exciting for me.
And considering they're a win away, mm-hmm. they've put Philly into a disadvantageous position. But I also love that Seattle and Detroit has gone to 5.
It has gone to 5, yes. Detroit got hot yesterday. I think mm-hmm. in the third or fourth inning, I think. All of a sudden, it was you looked up and they're like, oh my God. And up to that point, though, it was all Seattle.
And the Tigers, though, it really is the opportunity, the reversing of this collapse.
100%. If you make it to the ALCS, I didn't care when you beat Cleveland in the wild card round. You make it to the championship series. Who cares about a division pennant?
Who cares about the division pennant at that point? If you have a chance to make it to the World Series, apologies to nobody.
Mm-hmm. Scooble will get the start tomorrow for them as well. And then tonight, as I mentioned, Dodgers-Phillies at 6 and then Brewers-Cubs at 9. That is going to do it for me and Derek. For more on tonight's hockey game, stay tuned. Sabres Live coming up next. You're listening to WGR.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.